going on, good people? Welcome back to the Gospel Sports Truths Podcast. I hope you guys are having an excellent week. We have a lot to talk about. Before we hop into it, remember, you can check us out on YouTube now at the Gospel STP on YouTube. Again, that's at the Gospel STP on YouTube. I'm your Jose, the fantasy football fiend, and I have with me my guy, BK Wins. Holla at the people, BK.
Hey, y'all.
So, let's hop right into it, BK. What's the good word for the week?
Sure. So, an NBA update. The Oklahoma City Thunder advanced to the NBA Finals and likely await the Pacers as they lead 3-1. What are your thoughts on how the Thunder performed so far in advancing to the Finals? Do you expect the Pacers to close the deal and meet them there? And then the other question I have for you is, how do you see the Finals going?
OKC is cruising along like they have pretty much all year. The Pacers are actually showing that they've grown a tick, if you will, from last year. And they're also showing that as the talking heads, such as ourselves, bring up a whole bunch of different teams in the East that we like to win championships, we might not want to forget about that team. That's pretty much where I am now as far as the Pacers are concerned, because right about now, they aren't too far behind OKC. It's just going to be a matter of matchups. So with Minnesota, Minnesota can only play one way. The way that they played was great going up against a team with a deficiency in the post, like the Lakers. But when you have a team that can match up with you in the post, it doesn't quite work out the same way when there is no counter move. They play like they play. There aren't any additional players that they can kind of lean towards if things aren't going the way they want them to go. So they ran into the same type of a buzzsaw that the Lakers ran into when they ran up against the Timberwolves. So styles make fights. I will say that as far as the overall NBA Finals are concerned, when both teams get there, I am looking at OKC in 5. Yeah. They can keep up with you on offense. They can run and gun you on offense the same way the Pacers do, while at the same time never stop playing defense to do it. There is no team currently in the playoffs that's a good matchup against them, as far as I can see. So that's kind of where I'm at as far as that whole ordeal is concerned right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Finals for Oklahoma City was actually against Denver. Denver was by far their toughest matchup. Since they won't see the Celtics in the Finals, it's going to be they'll be on cruise control. I like the Thunder to win in 5 as well. I expect the Pacers to win one of these next 3 games. They got 3 chances to win one, so I like their chances to win one.
And I'll tell you this. I think the game they're most likely to win will be game one. Once OKC knows what they have up against them, it could be a sweep if they don't win game one. Like, it's just a horrible matchup.
The Thunder are just so much better than the teams remaining. It's not even a fair fight. So I agree with you there. Also in the association, there's some trade rumors. The Cavs obviously had a historic and memorable, an amazing regular season, winning 64 games, winning their division, and of course, getting the top seed in the Eastern Conference. However, they bowed out early to the Pacers, and they might be willing to trade Darius Garland and or Jared Allen after that disappointing early playoff exit. What should the Cavs do this offseason? Keep in mind, Allen is on a 3-year, $91 million contract, and Garland is in the midst of a 5-year, $193 million contract.
Well, two things can be true here. You're not that far off, but you also aren't that good. What I mean by that is this. You aren't that far off that you should start making wholesale changes, but you also aren't that good, perennially speaking, where you can just be a team that says, well, we're just going to ship off talent because we didn't win a championship this year. Like, what? What are you talking about? Like, you're not going to win one next year either. Like, what are we doing? Like, be okay with being a really good team and winning and just become better. Like, this is your coach's first year. This is a lot of time for a lot of your players. It's their first time playing this style. You had a whole bunch of like, why make wholesale changes for something that was almost great? Like, do a little bit of tinkering, maybe bring in a veteran or two that can kind of fill a few spots. And outside of that, like, I don't understand the logic behind breaking up a 64-win team and bringing back what from where?
Yeah, I think this is a classic overreaction because they won 64 games. They were the top seed. They had home court advantage where they were 34-7 in the regular season. They steamrolled the Heat. And look, let's be honest, and as a team and a franchise, they can't make excuses, but as fans, we can. And at the end of the day, like, even though the Cavs lost to the Pacers in five games, other than game four where they got whitewashed and it was over at halftime, they had double-digit leads in the second half in the other four games. And they've dealt with a lot of injuries. Why do I bring this up? Because the Cavs were the better team than the Pacers. Injuries got them, not the Pacers. The Pacers.
Well, BK, I can't let you get away with that one. Let me tell you why. I believe the Cavs and Pacers played each other five times this year in the regular season, and the Cavs lost all five. So there's that piece too.
I don't think that's the case.
It may not be five. However many times the Cavs played the Pacers this year, they lost.
I say that because they would have not played them more than four, and the Cavs won.
Maybe it was four.
64-18, and I'm pretty sure four of the 18 losses weren't to the one team. We have a homework assignment for you there. But I say that to say, I still believe my point still stands because the regular season and playoffs are two different things. In the regular season, teams don't care. They do care in the playoffs. When Garland misses the first two games and wasn't right the whole series, and he takes a lot of pressure off of Mitchell, Mobley and Hunter only missed game two. They were fine moving forward, so no problem there. But the other thing is they just blew these big leads. I mean, I guess my biggest point is not necessarily the injuries. It's that if you're up double digits in four or five games, it's not like you got blown out and were overwhelmed. You know, like you were there and were controlling the game. Give Indiana credit for imposing their will in the game and wearing them out and making the clutch plays. Give the both things can be true. The Pacers executed much better when it mattered most, but the injuries and blowing those leads is not something the Cavs have done. The only reason why I bring that up really is to get to this point, which is, had the Cavs finished that series off, then they would have had the Knicks in the finals, the conference finals, and they're a much better team than the Knicks. And so the Cavs are in the NBA finals anyway. Now, they wouldn't have beat Oklahoma City, don't get it twisted. They would have gotten railroaded. But the point is, they would have been in the NBA finals and nobody would have had a discussion about blowing up this team or making any moves. They would have been thrilled making it to the finals.
Yeah. I have to agree with you, and I stand corrected too. They played each other three times, and it was a 2-1 split. So they did win the series, if you will, during the season. They just played them well all year. So the same as I said, styles make matchups, styles make fights. It's the same thing. There's just some teams that just, for whatever reason, they might not have any other team's number, but they seem to be able to figure out a way to beat you. But
one last thing, Zay, on the Cavs. The Jared Allen part, I really do think they say where there's smoke, there's fire. Last year, they were upset. There was rumors that players were upset, and there was some bugaboo in the organization about Jared Allen missing playoff games because he was dealing with an injury, and they felt he should have come back sooner than he did or didn't try hard enough to come back. There was a big, like, to-do about that, and there was talks about trading him in the offseason. Well, here's another offseason. They're talking about it again. It's like that's the one piece where if they make a move, that might make sense because they already have Mobley. So it might make sense for them to do something there. But getting rid of Garland, to me, is just crazy.
Rui Hachimura, Austin Reeves, send over Jared Allen. Enjoy your season. They need to get a little bit deeper, you know?
I'm shocked that you made a trade with the Lakers.
Well, you know, I'm just saying, you know, I just know of a team that needs a center. You want to move off of them. You didn't get a good enough offer last go-around, or he would already be gone. So,
listen, you should have had Mark Williams, but your GM screwed the pooch on that one.
They got a little too cocky. But it's some pretty decent centers that'll be free agents as well. So I'm not too worried about it for the Lake show this offseason.
It's just never a good look, buddy, when you have the deal done, you cry about a physical, and then he plays the whole rest of the year.
And the guy that you traded to the other team was immediately injured as soon as he got there. But you want to be picky.
Right.
Yeah. Now, show that may not go on. Nuggets guard Russell Wilson announced that he had surgery to repair two broken bones in his right hand. And we're not exactly sure if he's going to return next season. I've seen a few posts that indicated that he is retiring or has retired. I'm not 100% sure. I got to go back and look now. I don't remember seeing anything from like ESPN or something like that, which is normally a telltale. Some of the other sites and stuff like that try to get out in front versus being the most accurate, if that makes sense. But how do you feel it will impact his legacy if he does or does not come back?
So, two things. I looked at ESPN, CBS, The Athletic. I looked at everywhere that I know where to look, and they're even including his social media. And there is nothing to indicate that he's retiring. In fact, he confirmed his injury status, surgery, and that he will be looking forward to returning. So,
he's a free agent, right? Or
I'm not sure about his status.
Okay.
That I don't know. But as far as his legacy part goes, I don't say this often, and especially not for a professional athlete that makes $1 gazillion. But part of me feels bad for him, because if I could describe him in one word, it would be underappreciated. I know that he has a shortcoming, much like many pro athletes. But the guy, over the course of his career, outside of not winning a title, and he gets labeled a non-winner because he hasn't won one, at the end of the day, he's had a tremendous impact on the game with his performances. He's a walking triple-double every time he steps on the court. He fit in well nicely with the Nuggets this year. He really helped that team. He wasn't some ancillary thing that had no contribution. He was a valuable part of that team. And I just think that misunderstood and underappreciated would be what I would describe him as. I understand in pro sports, you're measured by did you win or did you not. It's a results-oriented business, and he didn't win a title. And he had some chances on those Thunder teams. He had chances to get it done. If you don't win one with Harden and KD and yourself, I don't know what more to say than that. But the truth is, he's had a Hall of Fame career, and he deserves to be celebrated for his level of greatness and not scrutinized and criticized to the degree that he has been.
I agree with you. The word that I would use, I know this was not a part of the segment, but since you chose a word, I'm going to choose one too, VK. Scapegoat. I believe that He may actually be one of the greatest point guards to play the game. It's interesting to me that we'll go back and we'll look at, correct me if I'm wrong, I want to say, is it Baylor? Who averaged, the only other NBA player to average a triple-double? Was it Baylor?
Oscar Robinson.
Oscar Robinson, yes. Now, when it was only Oscar Robinson, it was a phenomenon of epic proportion. Westbrook joins the ranks, and all of a sudden, it ain't as big of a deal as it was when it was only Oscar. It's only two dudes to ever do it, out of all the dudes to ever try it. Like, he's one of the best point guards to ever play with. He's a different type of point guard than maybe we were used to seeing over the years, but I don't think whether he continues to play or whether he hangs it up, I don't think it changes anything, honestly. For me, I don't look at him any different if he doesn't hang him up and just rides the coattails of a team that wins a ring next year. I still don't look at his career as being greater because you finally put a ring on your. I'm not that dude. So I don't, I mean, I believe he's great, and I don't think he would be any less or more great if he won a championship on his way out the door.
Well, I just look
same thing as a Carmelo Anthony type scenario.
Well, I look at some of these players like Karl Malone, Stockton, Charles Barkley. These are great, great players that just didn't win a title. You mean to tell me that they're less than because they didn't win one? Like, they were great.
Well, Karl Malone is less than because he's a dirtbag. That's a different conversation.
He's a lousy human being, but he's not thought of less what he did on the court. It's the off the court part that has caused his problems.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, buddy, we get to close this segment with your favorite player to talk about. We get to talk about a little Caitlin Clark. You're welcome. This was for you.
That's my girl.
So Fever star Caitlin Clark will be out at least 2 weeks with a left quad strain. Normally she's going to be free. How does this impact the Fever short term? And of course, once you respond, I will give you the official BK betting angle and how things have changed because of the injury.
This is awesome. Nothing better could have happened for the Fever. You know why? They get to go out there and show that they're the Fever and not the Caitlin Clarks. They get to go out there and show that Caitlin Clark isn't the only player on the team that makes the Fever a great team. They also get to go out there and see what other players can shine in her absence, letting them know what other areas of opportunity and what other strengths that they currently have that they may not have gotten the opportunity to kind of see those players shine, if you will, or kind of seeing them in different roles and kind of spreading things around, if you will, kind of seeing what you have in other spots, because that can become huge later on in the season when maybe you can't play the way you. Okay, right now what they get to do is they get to not end up like Minnesota, because if you go up against the team that can take out what you do best, you better have another angle. They get to figure out what that angle is without putting Caitlin on the bench, which they can't do when she's not hurt, to figure out. So, 2 week injury, whatever. You'll be fine. Come back strong. We got some things to figure out. The coach is going to do her job while you're going. The other players are going to do their job while you're going. Your team will be better for you when you get back. That's where I am with that situation.
Yeah. So, couple things. So, from a betting angle, it's very obvious the injuries affected her odds. And I know that the Fever nor Caitlin Clark care about winning the MVP. They care about winning games and winning a championship. So make no mistake about that's their goal. But from a betting perspective, because you know that's what I do, her MVP, so coming into the season, Clark, and prior to the injury, was the favorite to win the MVP at plus 110. Now Collier is the favorite at minus 275. Clark dropped all the way to plus 400. Asia Wilson third at...
It's crazy, but go on.
Plus 1,000. So here's my whole take on the betting part of this. I came really close to giving a best bet last week behind Asia Wilson. here's my question about the MVP, and this goes no different back in the day when Jordan could have won the MVP every year and didn't. If we're talking about the best player in women's professional basketball, it's Asia Wilson. There's nobody better on both ends of the floor than her. Now, if it's a popularity contest, then I get that Caitlin Clark's in the running. But she's nowhere near the best player in women's pro basketball. She's not even in the top five. The fact that she's the favorite tells me it's a popularity contest, and Vegas knows this, and Vegas is hoping you're dumb enough to take that bet. But here's the thing, and I'm just going to say this, and this is not hitting Caitlin Clark because she's an amazing player, and the league is better off for having her. I've watched some of their games. In my opinion, or as some people like to say, in my humble opinion, she's not even the best player on that team. It's actually Leah Boston.
Leah Boston. I think he's going to say that.
Like, when they played the Liberty and went to overtime, who was the one started out 8 out of 8 and had 29 points and carried that team? That's the best player on that team. Again, Clark is terrific. She's a great player. She deserves all the credit she can get. You can't win MVP if you're not even the best player on your own team. The end.
So, and I wish I could turn the camera so you could see my Caitlin Clark and the Leah Boston posters up in the man cave. But yeah, my two favorite players in the WNBA. Here's the thing, y'all. Asia Wilson right now, who's another one of my favorite Gamecocks all the time, she's leading the WNBA in like just about every important statistical category. Defense, offense, et cetera, et cetera. It's, barring injury, it's almost inconceivable that Caitlin Clark had any chance at being, well, some people will look at MVP as best player. Some people say valuable is not the same as best. One could argue that even if you looked at it from that perspective, as far as most valuable instead of best, if you remove Caitlin Clark from the Fever as currently constructed, they're still going to win. You remove Asia Wilson from the Aces as currently constructed, I don't know if they're going to win. You remove Collier, she's a beast. Don't hear what I'm not saying. But I think they would still figure it out. So even whether you're looking at best player or whose team would fall off the cliff if they weren't there, that makes them the most valuable for their team, I still got to go Asia. Now, if you're saying most valuable in its literal sense for the WNBA, it's Caitlin Clark for the next 5 years. If that's the direction you're coming from, she should win it. She definitely should win it. But what does it actually mean? Like we never really truly get a concrete answer on what MVP actually means. And everyone has their own definition, which means nobody's wrong.
It's a moving target. And it's
there you go. It's a moving goalpost. Absolutely. Yes, sir.
What I will say, though, is, and this isn't even the segment for this, but I'm going to tell you this already. Feel free to start throwing some coin towards Asia Wilson plus 1,000 to win MVP. You're never
going to now. The odds are only going to get
better odds than that.
Absolutely. Yeah, that just makes sense.
And by the way, just in case you're wondering for those of you at home, she opened at plus 400. So now the odds have almost tripled. You're getting better odds. She's still third, but now it's swung in Collier's favor. Yeah, I'm sorry. If you really watch basketball and you're talking about value, this is a no-brainer. Wilson should win hands down. And as long as she stays healthy, that's the big if. Well, wrapping up this segment, the defending champs are back. We're going to go to the ice. The Florida Panthers come from 2 goals down to win 5-3 and eliminate the Canes 4-1. The Cup Finals will likely have a rematch between the Panthers and the Oilers. And by the way, I would love to say that I don't love being right, but you know I do. I told you 2 months ago it'd be the Panthers and the Oilers. And guess what? Who's it going to be? The Panthers and the Oilers. Zay, what do you think?
Well, BK, I'm going to tell you what I think. We're in the money. We're in the money. That's what I think, BK. BK's best bets have been on fire. This is, look, for you that have been with us the whole time, this is not a happenstance. He got just about everything that you could bet on in hockey right last year. He told you 2 months out who the finals were going to be and didn't have to take a mulligan on either. So, yeah, I've just learned to not need to understand, but just listen to BK when he says that's what you're going to put your money on. That's what I think about that, BK.
Well, I appreciate it, buddy. And I know that your wife, Ebony, who celebrated her birthday not long ago, and I hope she had a happy birthday. I know she appreciates all the success you've had as well as this is too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're doing fine over here on Cloud Nine.
Well, that wraps up the good word of the week. Start us off with the truth and nothing but the truth, buddy.
Our truth and nothing but the truth. All righty. So this isn't as much philosophical as it is exhaustive, if you will. Because I really had to go through this in my mind, like, how do I really feel about this? Because I got to stand on what I say, because this is our truth and nothing but the truth. So which NFL 2024 team won't make the playoffs in 2025? BK, I'm going to let you start us out.
So you're going to love this.
What you got?
I'm going to do something. First of all, I'm going to incorporate both of us in my answer.
Okay.
So I have an honorable mention, but I also have a betting angle. So, you know, the first thing that I looked at, because all of you guys who listen regularly, and we appreciate you, and for those that you don't know, the first thing I'm going to look when I looked at the question was, what's their schedule and what did Vegas have their total wins odds for the season to be?
Makes sense.
Well, so my honorable mention is the Rams, because from a talent perspective, I can see them making the playoffs. I just wonder, will they stay healthy? Stafford literally is a walking injury because of the wear and tear on his body and stuff. And give him credit, because he plows ahead. He's tough. But we don't know if that's going to last. And then the second part, and so my answer, who, by the way, also has the lowest team wins, is the Steelers at 8.5 wins. And the reason why is they play in a brutal division with the Bengals and the Ravens. They play in a loaded AFC where they're going to have to deal with the Bills and the Chiefs and the Broncos and the Chargers and the Texans and all these teams. And I don't know, unless I've been living under a rock and just missed this, Mason Rudolph, the red-nosed reindeer, is still your quarterback and you're going to go to the playoffs with him? Really? I know the coaching's good. I know the defense is really good. I know they have a running game. That's great. If you can't score 10 points, it's going to be hard to win. The Steelers, they are the pick. What say you?
So, actually, I picked the Steelers as well. I won't leave you in suspense. My honorable mention is actually Green Bay. I believe that their division is kind of starting to look a little bit like the AFC North. It's just as packed with talent. And they're normally the team that tends to suffer the most injuries and from the most important people. So I can see, not necessarily based on talent, but based on some happenstance where something goes awry and the other teams within their division holding serve, kind of taking Green Bay out of it.
No, I love it. And that makes sense. And they're in a tough division, too, with the Vikings and the Lions and the up-and-coming Bears. So
Bears are going to be better this year. Bears are going to be a lot better this year.
Yeah, because they have a competent head coach. The last coach should have coached at Walmart. Or better yet, the old Kmart. He could have been the blue light special.
He still would have got fired, but go on.
So my favorite question of the week.
Okay.
This is my favorite one. Who will be the next? And by the way, I count the Patriots as the last NFL dynasty. Who it will be the next NFL, NBA, and MLB dynasty? I ask because in the NBA, teams don't seem to go back-to-back anymore, let alone three in a row like they used to before. And in MLB, it hasn't been since the Yankees to go back-to-back in MLB. So the Dodgers win the division every year and then usually don't win the title. So usually, although they did last year. So who do you think in those three sports are the best chance to have a dynasty?
I actually consider the Chiefs to be a dynasty, to be the last NFL dynasty. When you go to, what was it, like seven Super Bowls or something stupid, like they are like that's dynasty. It wasn't over the same expanse of time as New England, but I dare you find very many teams that can do what they have been capable of doing, and also understanding that one of the only reasons that they didn't do it last year was due to injury of some of their key players. So I will say that it's the Chiefs, and I don't see anybody coming after the Chiefs. If the Chiefs weren't currently doing it, I'd say there won't be a next one. NBA, nobody. I don't see it. MLB, Dodgers, because they can afford to pay for it. But I'm going to go Chiefs. Well, so actually, based on the question being, who will be the next? If I believe that the Chiefs are a current, that means I got none in Dodgers.
So I'm going to go in reverse order. The Dodgers, because they're buying their way there. So the Dodgers would be the best chance. Although it's going to be hard for them in the postseason, even with all this talent, because they still have Dave Roberts as their manager. And the only reason why they won the World Series last year is they actually had a worse manager than Dave Roberts and Aaron Boone. And Aaron Boone literally cost them that series with his boneheaded moves. So Roberts got saved by Boone. But the Dodgers would be my pick there. The Chiefs, I see your point there, but I'm going to still count the Chiefs as the next NFL dynasty, or current one, I guess, that's in progress. Seven straight AFC title game appearances, three world championships, two runner-ups, so five Super Bowls, I think, in the last 7 years. The Chiefs would be my pick there. If you didn't let me pick them, it would be hard to pick somebody there. In basketball, the closest thing that I see would be the Thunder. I'm confident that the Thunder will win this year's title, and they are loaded. You know, they have a young, talented core. They have a ton of ample draft assets. And with GM Presti there, they have a really strong front office. They are the model of how to do things right in professional sports. They're young. They're very, very good. They're very, very deep. And yeah, they're in the Western Conference is tough. But the good news for them is, you know, if they get to the finals, they're way better than everyone else in the East. So it won't be much of a problem for them. So I like them. If there's to be a dynasty, I like them.
I can't like them to be a dynasty. That would be saying that they're going to kick the crap out of my Lakers over the next decade. So absolutely not. Definitely not OKC, if anyone else that we've talked about.
For those of you watching the program, he did everything he could to not fumble his yellow and purple and gold hater blockers that he's got over there.
I'm just saying. The Don is going to get some players coming out of the woodworks that y'all didn't think would ever want to be a Laker once LeBron goes, because then there's no shadow that you have to play in. I'm just telling you, that's the way it works. People don't want to play under LeBron's shadow, and I don't blame them. Luka don't have one. Luka is the sunlight. he's almost Kid Icarus. We just got to keep him from flying too high to the sun or eating too many cheeseburgers or however that works out.
I love that video game, by the way.
Absolutely. We're not going to go into Nintendo because we're going to start sounding like the old men that the back in my day. But Nintendo pretty much kicks the crap out of just about everything else going. Super Nintendo's is up there too. Not to venture off into that topic because that is not our top five all time conversation this week. We'll get to that in just a second. That's not it. Go ahead, BK.
So one last thing, wrapping up the truth here. Should the NBA change the rules at the end of the game to stop teams from intentionally fouling while up 3 points?
Yep. Pretty quick answer for that one, BK. Does it need an explanation? Like, why would you? Okay. Let me tell you what you do when you allow things of that nature. You're allowing the people that pay attention to do the thing that they shouldn't do because you haven't made a rule that indicates that they can't do. You make it a Belichickian type atmosphere and environment for there to be something to be taken advantage of that others will say, hey, you shouldn't do that. And for everyone else to say, hey, it's not against the rules. So just like, what do you gain from it? It would be my question. If you don't gain anything from it, but you can lose from it, and what do you have to lose from it? Fan interest? Fairness? It's just not, it doesn't make the game better. Like, I don't see the point of, maybe you can give me some historical perspective of why it was added and what it was attempting to resolve, but it went the opposite way and they just never corrected it. I don't see a reason for it. So
here's what I'll say in response to what you said. I would love to say that I'm confused. And when you know I say this, that means I'm not. I can't stand double standards in rules that make no sense. In every aspect of the NBA, every single rule is geared towards the offense. Every single one. So help me understand why it's good for the game to allow a team who's down 3 points and has the ball and needs three to tie, why essentially giving them two is good for the offense. It's bad for the game because it takes away the excitement of a game tying three. It's bad for the offense. It's a disadvantage to the offense who's trying to get back in the game. And in every sport, the rules are geared towards the offense. What are we doing? And the other rule, while I'm fixing things, which is not part of the segment, but, you know, I'll carry on. Please stop with these hack-a-person fouls that you do throughout the game. That's ridiculous. You're literally hacking a player so he shoot because he sucks at shooting free throws to get the ball back. Look, nobody appreciates strategy more than me. Please know this. I love strategy and being analytical and all those things. And I understand at the end of the game up three, that's the right strategy to foul somebody because a two doesn't beat you. So I understand logically why it makes sense. Just because it makes sense doesn't mean it's good for the game or good for the offense. And if we do everything else for the offense, we need to change this too, like yesterday.
I agree with you 100%. It's just not consistent with everything else that we see in the game. So, and now it is time for our top five all-time TV couples. BK, this is going to be a good one, and you better know I had several honorable mentions on this one. But so I'm
only several?
Several.
I have no doubt.
Number five. You want to kick it off, or you want me to?
I will let you kick it off.
Number five for me, Homer and Marge Simpson.
Well, Simpson.
They've been together longer than most relationships of any of the friends that I know. You know how long they've been together? I was a baby, a wee pup, when Homer and Marge kicked it off. And they were already married when the show came out. Based on age. Just throwing it out there. Just saying, Homer and Marge, gotta love it. And should I throw out my honorable mentions first or last?
I would throw them out. Let's hear them.
Okay, honorable mention. Carl and Harriet Winslow, Family Matters. James and Florida Evans, Good Times. Uncle Phil and Aunt Viv, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Those are my honorable mentions.
I love it. All great choices.
Number five, what you got, BK?
My number five is a show that I love.
Wait. I'm sorry, BK. I'm sorry. I would be remiss not to add one piece there. Uncle Phil and the original dark-skinned Aunt Viv. Not the lady that came on down the line that was alright. Not that Aunt Viv. That couple, wouldn't make honorable mention. But the first Uncle Phil and Aunt Viv, those two. Yeah. Just wanted to put that out there. Sorry about that. But proceed.
My number five is from a TV show that I loved and I watched a long time. Chuck. Sarah and Chuck from the TV show Chuck, which is basically like a spy sleuth TV show. Absolutely loved, by the way. You know, one of my many celebrity wives would be Sarah from Sarah and Chuck.
Do you remember about how many seasons that had? That was a pretty good show.
I want to say it had 7 or 8.
Wow. Okay. It was a good show. Makes sense.
I loved it.
Number four for me, Martin and Gina. You gotta love Martin Payne. That was my show. Not so much my wife's show. But I think I watched every episode of Martin. So Martin and Gina. And I'm sorry, I gotta add another honorable mention because Tommy and Pam deserve to be on the list as well. But yeah, so we're gonna add them to the honorable mention. Yeah, go ahead. All right, moving right along. Go ahead.
Just so everyone knows, they have the top 30 list for this segment.
Oh,
my number four. Oh boy, I hope she's not listening. I hope she is listening because boy, did I have a crush on her. But from the show Castle, Beckett and Castle, Detective Beckett. Oh boy. Oh, how I love Detective 8 Beckett. Number four. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, goodness. Number three. This is going back in the day. And pretty much the rest of my list is going to kind of go back in the day. Archie and Edith Bunker, number three. One of my favorite shows. Archie told it like it was. Like you might not have liked some of the things that came out of his mouth, but he normally had a valid point at least. Like it was just one of those shows. You had to be there.
So what I love about my list today is four of the five of my top five are all one half of the couples that I had a crush on. So my number three. And my biggest crush of the top five, Saved by the Bell, Zach and Kelly.
Oh, hi. Yo. Okay. But BK, why'd you do that, man? Why'd you do that? BK, if you're going to go Zach and Kelly, you got to make AC Slater in. Oh, God. Help me. What's her name?
Jesse.
You got to put them as an honorable mention. Didn't they last longer than Zach and Kelly?
That wasn't the point. Let's be clear. This is very, 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 very biased top five.
Your crush was on Kelly. Not Jesse. Got it. Duly noted.
Carry on.
Goodness. All right. Number two. Well, we're moving on. George and Weezy, you got to go with the Jeffersons, my guy. Number two, George and Weezy. And I would also put them on a list of shows with the greatest theme songs. And we need to write that down because that needs to be a topic for an all-time top 5 minutes at some point. Shows the best theme song. But yes, I got to roll with the Jeffersons.
My number two, not on the crush list, so this will be the exception. Pam and Jim from Office Space. Oh, God, do I love this show.
Yes, yes, yes. I love that show.
Honorable mention number eight.
I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to say that's one of those shows where it was like my guilty pleasure, I guess. Like, but at the same time, I see exactly where you're coming from. I just wish that I had thought of that couple and they would have been an honorable mention. If you hadn't mentioned the first. All right. Okay. So number one, and this should come as no surprise, Heathcliff and Claire Huxtable. You got the Cosby Show? Come on, man. Look, I don't care about your opinion of Bill Cosby, the guy now. Whatever he did, didn't do, whatever. I ain't got nothing to do with that. But you can't take away my childhood based upon what he did or didn't do later on. And the Cosby Show, Heathcliff and Claire? Oh, that was relationship goals right there, buddy. For the vast majority of my culture, that was relationship goals right there. Just throwing that out there.
Great.
Got to be number one.
No, that was a great choice. So my number one will resonate with a lot of people out there, I'm sure, much like yours. Rachel and Ross from Friends.
I'll be there for you.
Exactly. And listen, everybody loves some Jennifer Aniston.
I got to tell you, this was probably one of the most fun top five all time lists. And it's, I've had the most fun. Because, look, I make no bones about it. I watch a lot of TV. It's one of my guiltiest pleasures. But based on where we work, it's not been a couch potato. It's research. So, or at least that's a good spin on it. You know, I mean, the more I know about TV, the more I can tell the people that are going to be able to make coins from. You know,
I feel like we're all getting finessed.
Possibly. But yeah, that was, please don't forget, we have to do a top five all-time TV show jingles. Yeah, got to put that on there. Now it is time for you to do what you do, kind sir, and make us some money. No pressure, but don't screw this up.
I want you guys to know, If I got paid for every text that I got from my buddy here about the responsibilities I have and I need to earn my keep, I just want you to know there's a lot of pressure over here to not screw this up. So in order to keep coming back on the show, I need to do my part. So here it is. The Thunder to win the NBA Finals. SGA to win Finals MVP. The Oilers to win game five and close out the Stars and advance to the finals. I've told you for 2 months it'd be the Panthers and the Panthers and the Oilers. Why would I change now? Give me the Oilers. It's closing time. It'll be the Oilers and Panthers for a rematch for the Stanley Cup. In tennis, I have a play. Tomorrow morning, Elena Rybakina has a match against Ostapenko. Rybakina, five straight wins on the clay. Her game starting to turn into form. Give me Rybakina. Her ground strokes will move Ostapenko around. Rybakina is on in better form. She's the better player. She has more weapons. And while they both have had success on these clay courts, the difference is Austin Pecos hasn't been since 2017. Gibby Rabakina to win in this match against in the French Open. And last but not least, I mentioned it earlier, I'll repeat it now. I gave you some best bets last week in the WNBA. I gave you Rookie of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year. We're now going to give you the MVP. It's Asia Wilson. My buddy said it earlier about his stats, both offense and defense, and he's on a really good team. Asia Wilson's odds were plus 400, now plus 1,000. And if you don't believe me how much these odds matter, I'm going to go back to a hockey thing that I said 2 weeks ago. Goaltender Sergei Bobrovsky, the goaltender of Florida, was 15-1 2 weeks ago. He then went to the betting favorite at plus 185. So that 15-1 is really good right now. I'm just saying, I'm just saying, when I give you these, you want to get them right away before the odds turn, because it's not as great value at plus 185 as it was at 15-1. So, you know, just something to keep in mind. But those are this week's best bets.
Looks like we are going to have a game five, minimally speaking, between the Knicks and Pacers. So be interesting to see how that series goes. I think that series can mess around and go seven just because the NBA needs the money. It's one last big market left, and that's New York. But don't pay attention to my conspiracy theories. Pay attention to BK's best bets. With that being said, it is now time to go into this week's Can't Miss Weekly Rants. You want me to go first? Are you up first, BK?
I will let you close it out. So I will give you mine and I'll steal something else you say. I'll be quick. Surprising that I'm pissed at the NCAA. Here's why. The transfer portal needs two major changes. One, players can no longer change teams every single year. Max portal usage cannot exceed two occurrences. I don't want you to have 4 years of college and then play for four different teams. That's not the point of the portal. It is not. That is abusing it. And two, there is no entering the portal until the conclusion of the sports season. When the college football playoffs are going on and people are jumping teams while the season is going on, that can't happen. Do better. Figure it out. The end.
So I am going to rant about a sport that's near and dear to my heart. We don't really talk about it all that much on the show, hence the rant. There normally isn't a whole lot to talk about because for whatever reason, no, I know the reason, and I'll include that in the rant, actually. I need boxing to get it together before it's too late. Like, we need the best boxers to go against the best boxers and let the chips fall where they may. See, what's happened is most of the boxers that are doing their thing now grew up watching Money Mayweather. And they've got it into their heads that it's more important to be undefeated than it is to be the best fighter. So therefore, I'm not even going to chance taking a loss because then I can't go for the immortal goal of having a better record at the end of my career than Mayweather. Here's the thing. By and large, most people don't consider Mayweather to be the best boxer ever, although he has one of the best records ever. You can't keep ducking fights and waiting until you're both past your prime to fight each other for whatever reasons. It's just not making sense. I don't know if there needs to be a central governing body to force people. I would hate to have to sick your boy Dana White on boxing. And boxers end up being treated like MMA fighters. But we see the best fights in MMA because they have to fight each other more often than not. I still want to see John Jones get in the ring against opponent that he probably should have fought about 3 years ago at this point. That's neither here nor there. But by and large, MMA gets it right as far as opponents that they put in the ring. I need boxing to catch up before the sport is so far gone that it's not possible to catch up. And that's where I fear boxing is currently going. So I need y'all to get it together or leave it alone. It's past time for the best of the best to fight each other to prove that they are truly the best and not just trying to keep the undefeated title versus being the best boxer. That wraps it up for this week. Next week, we'll be right back to you. Make sure you check out Wednesday's show with the Gospel Fantasy Football Podcast. But until then, that pretty much wraps it up. And remember, good people, always tell the truth.
And nothing but the truth.
We out.
Later, y'all.